KPFT HD2, Houston's Community Radio.
This is KPFT Houston.
Thank you seems like a trite sentiment for the generosity we see from our community for supporting KPFT. In particular, the heart of storytelling, with its pulse on human connection cemented each week by the wonderful storytellers spotlighted on So What's Your Story, is something that I will forever be grateful. So a special thank you to Michael, Hi, Kathleen, Paul, Bernadette, Warren, and Sandy for your generous donations and for honing in on So What's Your Story as the show that you gotta have in your lives. 713-526-5738, option one, or kpft.org, donations for your continued support. Four, Houston's Community Station. I am Hank Rubicek, producer of So What's Your Story, and remember, it's never too late to live happily ever after. So stay tuned for So What's Your Story with today's host, Larry Thompson, and treasure what you hear. Peace.
Well, you all know that Sweet Beat of Clouds Beneath Your Knees. Mr. Ray Lynch and chimes in every Wednesday afternoon for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and is found only on Houston's community station, KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and here, if you've heard us before, you've heard this before, but if you're new to our show, we celebrate the power of story by placing a spotlight on storytellers whose stories take us on voyages through windows of their souls and on fanciful excursion amid worlds of enchantment before returning us, hopefully, safely to the present. Now, the reason we're doing storytelling tonight, So What's Your Story, KPFT, HD1, 90.1, we're telling stories, and my guest tonight is Judy Taroski. Now, Judy is a native of Western Pennsylvania, but she now makes her home up in the northern panhandle of West Virginia. That's right, y'all. They've got a panhandle up there in West Virginia, just like Texas. Probably a little bit smaller and maybe pointed, but nonetheless, it's a panhandle. Judy graduated from West Virginia University. I believe that's the Mountaineers, unless I got that wrong, but I think that's the Mountaineers. And she worked as a reporter and an editor for newspapers in the Upper Ohio Valley. And I'm guessing that's the Upper Ohio River Valley, not just a big giant valley up in Upper Ohio, but we may hear more about that. In 2006, she won a first place at the Strand Theater Storytelling Festival Liars Contest in Mounds, West Virginia. And from there on, they allowed her to continue and develop her storytelling, even though she won that first place in the Liars Contest. She loves performing in libraries, museums, schools, and festivals. She even does virtual storytelling as well. Recently, I thought this was interesting. Judy contributed a story on Stay Human, a production of KAXE, KBXE, Community Radio in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. She draws on traditional tales, stories, folk tales, fairy stories, original tall tales. I think we're going to hear one of those a little later. Historic long-form narratives and West Virginia ghost tales. Now, Judy, welcome to KPFT Airwaves. Is your year off to a good start so far?
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm doing great. Year is off to a flying start. Interim president right now with the West Virginia Storytelling Guild, and we are busy lining up festival events and different things that we're getting involved in. Starting in May at Vandalia Gathering in Charleston, the West Virginia Folk Festival in Glenville, the Mountain State Art Fair in Ripley, West Virginia, and Grandview Storytelling Festival in Moundsville. And then personally, I'm getting some bookings now with libraries and festivals. So it's starting out to be another busy year.
That is, as a friend of mine says, that's as busy as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Now, well, of course, we've got our festival coming up in March as well, up in Denton, Texas. Now, the collection of stories that you have for us tonight, what connects them together? What's the thread that we're listening for?
Well, I recently took a fairy tale writing class, and one of the elements we learned about was everyday magic.
And everyday magic. Now, is that saying that people are carrying wands and wearing funny hats, or?
No, it just means that these stories have magic happens. It just happens. It drives the story, some of them, but it's just magic.
All right. Well, let's get started with your first story. And I saw this title, and I don't believe I've ever heard this story, so I'm interested to hear how it goes. It's called The King with Horse's Ears. So let's hear that story.
Hey, thank you. Well, King March was a very good king. Oh, he was just and fair in all his rulings in his kingdom. And he made sure everyone had work, everyone had a good place to live and had plenty to eat. So everybody in his kingdom was happy. Everyone, except King March. You see, King March had a secret. And he didn't want anyone to know about this. You see, King March had horses' ears. Now, they worked perfectly. He could hear just fine, but there they were up on top of his head, those horses' ears. So he grew his hair long to cover them, and then he had a special crown made to cover up those ears so nobody knew he had them. Well, after a while, that long hair got to be a problem because, you know, when he would go to eat, his hair would get in his mouth, and that's disgusting. And when he'd go out to practice his archery, if the wind blew, the wind would blow his hair in his eyes, and that was a little dangerous. So he figured he'd better get a haircut. Well, King March had a royal barber, and his name was Toma. And Toma had never been called before to the castle to give the king a haircut, but now he had been, and he was very excited. So he gathered up all his tools, and he headed off to the castle. King March greeted him very warmly. He said, "Now, Toma, come in. I want you to give me a haircut." "Yes, Your Majesty," Toma said. But when they got into the king's chamber, the king closed the door. He says, "Now, Toma, when I take off my crown, you give me a haircut, you're going to see my secret. And nobody is to know about my secret. You're to tell no one. Do you understand?" "Oh, yes, Your Majesty, I understand," Toma said. So the king took off his crown. And there were those ears, those horse's ears. So Toma did the best he could to trim the king's hair around his ears. And then when he left, he went home and he thought about that secret. And you know how it is when a friend has told you something about themselves that they don't want anybody to know, but it just starts to run around in your mind and in your chest. You got to tell somebody, you're going to just absolutely lose it. Well, that was happening with Toma. That king's secret was just making him absolutely bonkers. And he couldn't eat and he couldn't sleep. He was just miserable. Well, finally, one day, his good friend Bronwyn came to see him, and she saw that he'd lost weight and he was haggard. He looked awful. She says, "Toma, what's wrong with you? Are you ill?" He said, "Oh, Bronwyn, the king told me a secret and I can't tell anyone, but it's just killing me. I don't know what to do." And Bronwyn said, "Toma, why don't you go down to the river? There's some nice tall reeds growing there. Kneel down and tell that secret to the reeds. You'll get it off your chest and no one will know." "That's a great idea," Toma said. So off he went down to the river and he knelt down to the reeds and he went, "The king has horse's ears. King March has horse's ears." Oh, what a relief. That was off his chest. He revealed the king's secret, but to the reeds. So he went home, and for the first time in weeks, he had a wonderful supper, and for the first time in weeks, he got a good night's sleep. Well, the next week was King March's birthday, and he always had a huge party for the whole kingdom. There was music and dancing and lots of good food and a great big birthday cake, and everybody enjoyed it. Well, just so happened that Beth, who was the best flute player in the whole kingdom, was on her way to the castle for the king's birthday party. And she happened to walk by the river, and she saw these beautiful tall reeds growing there. And she thought, you know, I could use a new flute. So she went over to the reeds and took out her little pocket knife and cut one down and whittled herself a beautiful new flute. And she went on toward the castle for the party. So when she arrived, all the party was in full swing. People were dancing. They were having wonderful food. Everyone was just having a great time. And King March spotted Beth there in the crowd. He says, "Beth, Beth, you are the best flute player in the entire kingdom. Play us a song." "Yes, Your Majesty," she said. So she took out that brand new flute, put it to her lips, and when she blew, what came out was, "The king has horse's ears. King March has horse's ears." "What?" said the king. "What did I just hear?" "I don't know what happened, Your Majesty," Beth said. I just don't know." "Beth, you better play it again, and it better be music this time, or you are in so much trouble." "Yes, Your Majesty." So Beth put that flute to her lips and blew. And once again, "The king has horse's ears. King March has horse's ears." "Oh, you are in so much trouble, Beth," the king raged. "You get up here right now. You are in so much trouble." But then Toma saw that his friend Beth was in trouble with the king. So he went up to the king and says, "Your Majesty, please don't blame her. It's not her fault. It's mine. Your secret was weighing on me so badly. I went down to the river and I whispered your secret to the reeds. Please, it's not her fault." And then Bronwyn saw that Toma and Beth, her two friends, were in trouble with the king. So she went up to the king and said, "Your Majesty, don't blame them. It's my fault. Toma was, well, he was almost sick with carrying that secret of yours. So I'm the one who said, go to the river and whisper your secret to the reeds. So please don't blame them." Well, the king looked at the three friends standing there in front of him. And then he said, "Yes, I have horse's ears." And he reached up and took off his crown, and there they were, those horse's ears. And everyone in the kingdom looked, and everyone shouted, "Hooray for King March! Hooray for our king! Our king has horse's ears!" "What?" said King March. "You don't think I'm strange? You don't think I'm different? That's why I didn't tell anybody. I thought you'd make fun of me." "Oh, no," everyone said. "This is great. Our king has horse's ears. You are special." "Well, in that case," King March said, "it's my birthday. And I want everyone to celebrate, have wonderful food, eat, dance, have fun with the music, have some birthday cake. It's my birthday because, well, I have horse's ears." So everyone did. Everyone had a wonderful time. And you know, after that, King March didn't feel ashamed or different because of those horse's ears, because he knew he was special.
Fabulous. Fabulous. And the everyday magic in that, are we taking the everyday magic from the reeds? Are we taking the everyday magic from the friends working together? Where do we pull our everyday magic from?
Magic is that there was kindness. Kindness. Beth, you know, Bronwyn cared about Toma. Toma didn't want to spill the king's secret. He was honoring his request. Beth wanted to play for the king with her brand new flute. And yet the king realized these friends were correct. He had been feeling ashamed of his ears, so they let him see that he didn't have to feel ashamed.
I'm pretty sure we could we all could determine that we need a little bit more kindness in a lot of areas of life these days.
And it works like magic.
And
It
it
really
works like magic. Now, I'm especially looking forward to your second story here. And now folks are out there, they're driving along, they're listening in. This might be their first time, and so we're going to give them something. Except me. Well, this is the Three Little Pigs. Except I have a feeling that this is not the same old version of the Three Little Pigs. Is there any huffing and puffing, anything like that?
No huffing and puffing at all.
All right. All right. So everybody to get a tighter grip on the wheel or get a tighter grip on your tablet or your phone or your computer or however you're listening to us tonight. And let's hear the Three Little Pigs.
This is the Three Little Pigs, the way I tell it. Mama Pig had three little pigs. The oldest one was named Brownie. Now, he was a nice enough pig, but Brownie liked nothing better than wallowing in the mud. Now, if there was a mud puddle over there, and I know this is radio, so imagine in your mind there's a mud puddle, he would be in that puddle and wallowing around and covered head to toe with mud. That's going to cause you trouble someday, Mama Pig would say. Now, the middle pig was named Whitey. Now, she was a nice pig, but she was kind of greedy. And all the farmer had to do in the evening was to carry the bucket of feed out and put it in the trough and yell, "Sue!" And Whitey would push and shove her way to the front of the line just so she could get there first. And Mama Pig would say, "That's going to cause you trouble someday." Now, the youngest pig was named Blackie. Oh, he was a nice pig. He was so smart and hardworking, and he was a kind pig. And Mama Pig's heart would just swell with pride when folks said, "That boy's going to win Blue Ribbon someday." Now, I hate to bring a bit of sadness into this story, but you see, Mama Pig was ill. Her three-pack-a-day habit was catching up to her, and she knew she wasn't long for this world. And she wanted her three little pigs to be safe after she was gone. So she wanted to build each of them a house just the way each pig wanted. So she called her three little pigs together and told them of her plan. "Now, children, I'm not long for this world. And I want to build each of you a house exactly the way you want it so you'll be safe. Now, Brownie, my boy, what kind of house would you like, son?" "Gee, Mom. Yeah. Oh, wow. How my own house. Yeah. I want a house made out of mud. Yeah, that's a house made out of mud because I can wallow around in it all day. Yeah, a mud house, Mom. Yeah." "All right," she said, "but you'll be sorry. Now, Whitey, my dear, what kind of house would you want?" "There, I want a house made out of cabbage. That way I can just lay around all day and eat and nibble, and it's all mine." "All right," Mama Pig said, "but you'll be sorry. Now, Blackie, my boy, what kind of a house would you want, son?" "Well, Mother, I have considered all the ramifications of what makes a secure house, and I want a house made out of brick. That way I'll be warm in winter, cool in summer, and it'll be absolutely safe." "That's my boy," Mama Pig said. Well, Mama Pig was good to her word. She had each house built for her little pigs exactly the way each one wanted. And when they were finished, she called her three little pigs together to give them some advice. "Now, children, I'm going to shuffle off this mortal coil, but I want to give you some advice for after I'm gone. Watch out for our arch enemy, the fox. Now he'll come around and he'll try to get into your house and he'll pretend to be somebody you know, but don't let him in. Because if you do, he's going to take you off to his den and make you into a pulled pork supper. Do you understand?" "Oh, yes, Mama. Yes," they said. Well, sad to say, Mama Pig died. A moment of silence, please. Okay. Not long after that, Brownie was in his house just wallowing around and having a wonderful time when there was a knock at the door. Who is it? Brownie, man. You know, it's me, man. It's your good bud. I'm just digging your mud house, man. Can I come in and have a wallow with you? No, you go away. You're the fox. You just go away. All right. If that's the way you want it. That fox began to dig a hole in the wall of Brownie's mud house, and before long it was big enough, he reached in, grabbed Brownie, pulled him out, and took him off to his den. Meanwhile, Whitey was lying about her house, watching Netflix and nibbling and enjoying a good time when there was a knock at the door. Who is it? Oh, Whitey, girlfriend, I just love, love, love what you've done with your house. Oh my gosh, it's just so gorgeous. Say, can I come in and have a nibble with you? No, there won't be enough for the two of us. And wait a minute, you're the fox. You just go away. All right, if that's the way you want it. And that fox began to nibble and eat his way into the wall of Whitey's house. And before long, he reached in and grabbed her, pulled her out, and took her off to his den. And then he looked at Brownie and Whitey there, and he says, all right. All I have to do now is get your brother. I'll bring him back here, and I'm going to invite all my friends and family to have a pulled pork supper, and three little pigs ought to do it. Meanwhile, Blackie was in his house, counting out his blue ribbons when there was a knock at the door. Who is it? Mr. Blackie, I'm your biggest fan. And can I come in, please, and see your blue ribbons? No, you go away. You're the fox. All right, if that's the way you want it. Well, the fox knew he couldn't eat or dig his way through the walls of that brick house, but the chimney on the roof, aha, that was the security breach. Now, Blackie knew that chimney was a problem, and he was ready. He had a big pot of boiling water in the fireplace going just in time because those fox's footprints were going pad, pad, pad across the roof. And the fox started to slide down the chimney, nose first. Down, 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 down he went, till his nose hit that boiling water. Well, he gave out a great big yoop, and he flew up out of that chimney like a trident missile. Higher and higher he went, farther and farther, and up he went, until NASA declared him in orbit. Well, when Blackie realized the coast was clear, he went off to the fox's den and freed his brother and sister. Now, you'd think they'd be happy, but no, they were crying. Any place to live. Don't be ridiculous, Blackie said. You're my brother and sister. You're going to come and live with me. And that's what they did. Well, I'm happy to report that Brownie has cleaned up his act and he's now a soil conservation officer. Whitey has changed her diet and she volunteers at a soup kitchen. And Blackie is giving Zoom classes on how to win blue ribbons. And now I understand that since that fox is in geostationary orbit, they're all doing right well.
Okay. Now, folks, we've had our legs severely pulled with that story. So if you need to seek medical attention for that pulled leg, I will certainly understand. Now, Judy, how long have you been telling that particular tale?
I told that first at the Stone Soup Storytelling Festival. I think it was in 2016, I think it was.
So not too long, but long enough to know what is the best audience to hear that story. Is that a kid audience? Is that an adult audience? Is it a combination?
It's a combination, but the adults seem to get it.
You know, well, I like that reference to the Trident missile that and geostationary orbit.
That's I looked those things there. Up.
Oh, you have to look those
I up. I looked them up.
Now, a story like that you put together yourself. Now, folks listen to KPFT, so what's your story? Some of them will be storytellers, and some of them might want to be a storyteller, and some of them just look at storytelling as this mystical, magical art form they could never even approach. How do you come up with a variation like that of the Three Little Pigs?
Well, the original version of that was found in the Andrew Lang fairy books. It's a collection of like 12 books full of these wonderful old tales from literally around the world. And I read that one, and it wasn't the Three Little Pigs I knew. And I thought, well, okay. So then you just start, Megan Hicks, the storyteller, says you start fracturing things.
Fracturing.
Into a fractured fairy tale. You might remember that from Rocky and Bullwinkle years ago.
That's right. So Moose and Squirrel. Moose and Squirrel.
Moose and Squirrel. So you just start and just kind of change things up a little bit. And the more I told it, I thought, well, I could bring these voices into it and I could change the characters a bit. And I thought, well, Brownie is kind of a stoner. And I play him a little differently when there's children. He's not so much a stoner. But, well, full on, oh, wow, man. And then Whitey is a Valley girl.
Valley girl, sure.
Edge. And now my husband says that when we're grocery shopping. Says, you're going to buy some cabbage. So, and then Blackie, I pictured Sheldon from Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
I just pictured him as Sheldon.
My goodness.
So,
and so that just becomes a story when you're going to put a program together. That becomes a story. You look at the audience, you look at the time you have, you look at the other stories that you're coming in, and you can pull that story out at any time and use it.
Mm-hmm. I do that. And then you edit, as you know, as you edit when you see your audience, how can I edit the story to make it fit the audience?
So to make it fit the audience. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that voice you're hearing, besides my scratchy voice, belongs to Judy Tarowski. She's coming to us tonight on So What's Your Story, right here on KPFT HD1, 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget, KPFT's got free internet on HD2. Meet all of your news, arts, entertainment needs. We're proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, so What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Now bring in the KPFT brand of wide variety, the music, the programming, shows like this. It's a team effort. It involves a whole bunch of people working together. There's a board of directors, station management, engineers, hosts like me, Larry Thompson, tonight on So What's Your Story. And the most important member of the team is you. Without you, the rest of us have no reason for being here. And we're all here because you've told us you enjoy what we do here, and we want to keep on doing it. And if you're listening this evening, but you aren't yet a member, you can join us right now and become a member. And why not become a sustaining member? That's where your monthly gift will continue on until you tell us otherwise. Or perhaps, as Judy said, you shed this mortal coil. That's my favorite line from stories, if anybody can work that in. But if you want to join up with KPFT, become a sustaining member, kpft.org. That's the way to do it. As soon as you're sitting around a computer or a tablet or a phone and you're not driving through traffic, kpft.org. Super simple. Now, Judy, this version of the Three Little Pigs that you just put together for us, do you have other fractured tales that you do as well?
A few, but that's really my main one. I do some tall tales, original tall tales.
And in the opening, I mentioned that you do West Virginia ghost tales as well. Is that kind of a standard for that area? Are there ghost tales that just appear in October, or are they told throughout the year?
Kind of throughout the year, I tell from the collections of Dr. Patrick Gaynor and Dr. James Jones. Dr. Gaynor was considered West Virginia's premier folklorist and collector of music and tales. And I do a workshop on telling work West Virginia folk ta or ghost tales, and most of them are family stories. There are stories that have happened in a family. Something odd happened when grandmother died. There was a dove at the window, or there was a rainbow over something. And they're passed down in families. And Dr. Gaynor collected them from families around the state and from a lot of his students. And you could take a lot of those and create a story from them. Same thing with Dr. Jones's work. He collected them from students. So they're not jump tales. I don't particularly tell jump tales. Some
Understand.
of who they're a story. There was something eerie happened, something paranormal that families can't explain. Someone maybe have a premonition about something, or this woman appeared in the field while we were working, and we don't know who she was, but we couldn't get close to her. She kept moving away. Stuff like that. There's stories like Jim Barton's Fiddle, which is Dr. Gaynor said was a family story, but has entered the realm of folklore because it's been told by so many tellers. It's had that change from every telling. So it's now in the folktale realm. I tell one of Dr. Gaynor's called The Ghosts of Echo Rock that was told to him by a woman in her 90s. And it turned out that she was the youngest sister who witnessed the event.
Wow.
She was a child. It's a love story, and it's a beautiful story.
Well, I caught that part about the doves landing in the window. It reminded me that when I was young, my father died, and my mother would say, "The wolves are at the door." I don't think she meant the exact same thing as the doves landing on the windowsill. But now, if we were to depart from the mountaineer state for a bit and take a drive up to the coast of the northeast of the United States, and we would take a boat and go north and east across the big North Atlantic, we would eventually land in Wales. And you're gonna tell us a Welsh tale. And do you have connections to Wales from your past?
I do have Welsh ancestry, but I don't know when they came over or how. I know we have Lewis's and Davis's and Talbot's in the family. Those are good Welsh names. Ancestry tells me I have Welsh heritage, and I have some good friends in Wales. So
Well, if ancestry tells us, then it must be true.
they keep refining it, and they keep telling me, yes, you have Irish, you have Welsh, you have Scottish, you have Brittany, which is a Celtic area.
Now, this story you're going to tell for us, and folks who've heard me before, they know that I'm a country boy with limited vocabulary. So I'm not even going to try this name. Why don't you tell us the name of this story, and then let's hear it.
Okay. It's the Llanfaban Changeling, and it's one of these stories that versions of it appear in both Ireland and Wales. But I tell the Welsh version. And Llanfaban is a little village in the Glamorgan area, the Rhondda Valley. In the little village of Llanfaban, there was a young mother who had a sweet baby boy. Oh, and she doted on him. She would cuddle him and sing to him. She'd wrap him in warm quilts, and she would even keep all the curtains in the farmhouse pulled so the sun wouldn't shine directly on him. Well, one day she was going about her work inside the house when she heard the cows outside just bellowing and lowing and carrying on like something was attacking them or bothering them. So she ran outside to see what was wrong. And there was nothing wrong. The cows were all standing there very contentedly, chewing on their cud. When she went back inside, she was going about her work, and she noticed her baby, though. His eyes looked different. They looked ancient, wizened almost, and then his demeanor that day changed. He became not the sweet, cooing little baby, but he would wail, and he would carry on and fuss. He would spit into the fire and just wasn't like him at all, and this frightened her. So she went to the old man who lived in Kyrenos, and that was so named because it was built out of the stones stolen from Llanfemon Church at night. And the old man chewed on his pipe, and he sucked on his teeth, and he said, that might not be your babby. It might be an Anwadalin, a changeling left by the other people. There's a way we might be able to tell. So he took a raw egg and emptied it out, and then he filled it with beer. And he gave it to the young mother and said, take this home. Place 7 place settings at your table, then pour out the beer and make sure your baby can see and hear you and say that you're brewing beer for the harvest men who are coming to harvest your grain. Well, the young mother was frantic at this point, so she took the egg, went home, put the place settings out, made sure the child could see and hear her, and then she poured out the beer. And then she heard, I was old before my time. I lived before my birth. I remember the ancient oak, an acorn in the earth, but I've never seen egg of hen brewing beer for harvest men. Well, the young mother went back to the old man and told him what she had heard. And he said, yes, that is not your babby. And this is what you must do next. Wait until the next full moon. Go at midnight to the crossroads at the ford of the bell. Hide in the bushes. Say nothing, do nothing, but watch. And then tell me what you see and hear. It was several days until the full moon, and the young mother was frantic waiting. But finally, that day came, and it was midnight. She went and hid in the bushes. The clouds had moved over the moon, but when they passed by, the moon was blood red. And then she saw a procession coming toward her of little men and women, the women in crinolines and bonnets and the men in waistcoats and bowler hats, marching in front of her. And there in their midst, looking like himself, was her baby. It was all she could do to keep from running forward and grabbing him to her breast, but she held herself back. She went back to the old man and told him what she had seen and heard. He said, Papa, this is what you must do. We must get your baby back. He went over to his bookcase and took out a leather-bound volume and opened it. The pages were crusty. He thumbed through them until he found the passage he wanted. And then he said, this is what you must do. Get a hen, all black, no white feathers. Close every door and window in your house, even the mouse hole. Build a fire out of peat, not wood. Skewer the hen on a spit, and then turn it over the flames and watch the flames until the last feather falls from the hen. The young mother was nearly hysterical at this point, but she went out, found the black hen with no white feathers. She went home, locked every door and window. She stuffed rags in the mouse hole. She built a peat fire. Then she wrung the chicken's neck and put it on a spit and put it over the fire and began to turn the spit, and she watched the flames. Before long, she heard that same solitary violin that she had heard at the crossroads. And then she saw that same procession of little men and women marching in the flames. She held her breath. A child was crying. She could smell meat cooking. There was smoke. She couldn't breathe. She was suffocating. And the last feather fell from the hen. Silence. The fire damped down. She could hear her own breath. A voice gurgled behind her. She turned, and there was her baby, her sweet young baby, as he had always been.
My goodness. Now say the name of that town one more time.
It's a one with the two L's in Welsh. It's Llanfambon.
Llanfambon.
Kind of put your tongue up on the roof of your mouth to get the bubble.
Llanfambon. Okay. I'm gonna leave that to the professionals. That's what I'm gonna do. Now we can see with a story like that. This you would just assume is just a complete fantasy, but you have to imagine that tales like this were passed down from family member to family member to family throughout the villages, and here we've had it make its way across to us on the radio. These are old stories. My goodness. And the magic of getting the particular hen, and I'd like to know how he filled that egg with beer. That would be quite a skill to have. My goodness. Now, is there an audience that's better for that story, or can that story go to anyone?
It's more of an adult story, or teenagers. Teenagers, high school kid, well, middle school, I think, on up.
Middle school and above. Fantastic. Well, KPFT HD1 90.1 coming to you from H-Town. And H-Town is Storytown. This show started it all back in 2008, if you can believe that. We were the first storytelling platform in Houston, and how it has grown. Now we can talk about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, and that's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet virtually on the fourth Tuesday of every month, and you can find out the dates and the times for the next meeting on their website, www.HoustonStorytellers.org. They'll have a Zoom link there, and they'll have information about the upcoming events. And heck, you might even become a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild. And of course, on that website, you can enjoy past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, give or take maybe one or two, they're listed on the menu under radio program. And of course, Houston is proud to have the Moth at Warehouse Live back in full swing. They also meet on the second Tuesday of the month. You're going to enjoy astonishing stories and get to know Houston's storytelling community. And of course, you can crank up your storytelling skills by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association. Watch out for that festival that's coming up in March. And of course, the National Storytelling Network. And Judy would be the first to remind us, storytelling is all over the state of Texas and beyond. So even if you're out beyond the confines of the Grand Parkway, you can find your storytelling peeps. Now, Judy, here we are with this after the pandemic and whatnot. There's been all this electronic storytelling. Have you embraced that? Are you able to get on some of these programs around the country?
Yes, I have. I've been able to join the San Antonio Storytellers, join the Doc Moore Storytelling Guild, our own West Virginia Storytelling Guild meets right now. The board meets virtually. We have story swaps. Been a number of events that we've been able to take part in. It's been the tiny
little silver lining to all that pandemic stuff, being able to hear these voices from all over the planet. people you would not have been able to hear before.
Actually, exactly. I've even taken part in some storytelling events in Wales and in Ireland. You know, gotten to know some folks from Ireland virtually. One of the couple were going to be at Tejas, Colin Irwin. He's
Colin
coming.
Irwin, sure enough, one of the featured tellers at the Taos Festival in March, just around the corner. Now, your last story for us tonight has a great title, The Silkie and the Fisherman, and it's one of my favorites. Before I was going to say that, I should have stopped and said, I've heard a version of this that's one of my favorites, but I can't wait to hear you tell the version that you're going to tell us, The Silkie and the Fisherman.
Thank you. Well, this story came to Wales via a traveler, as we call the Roma. And it's from Scotland, actually. And it's about an old couple, John and Mary, lived in a stone cottage on the west coast of Scotland. The cottage was right on the beach. It was called the Shingle. It was a stony beach. And they were fisher folk. They farmed the sea. And in the evenings, when the weather was pleasant, they would sit out in front of their cottage and mend the nets where the seals had bitten through the netting. And John hated the seals. He would fuss at them. He said, "Those seals should all be shot." And Mary says, "Now, John, you know that there's plenty of fish out there. There's plenty of fish for all." And even when he sat down to eat, John would fuss that this might be his last meal. Those seals eating all the fish, he will no longer have a living, and how will they live? And Mary would shush him and remind him that there were plenty of fish for all. Well, one day, John was out fishing, and Mary was out on the shingle, and she was gathering up dulse. It was a red seaweed that she would dry and sell at the market on Wednesdays. And she had her leather apron full of dulse, and she looked down the beach, and there was what looked like a body. And she got a little closer and she realized it was a seal pup. She looked around and there were no adult seals around because she knew that they could be very aggressively protective of their young. But seeing none, she figured it was an orphan. So she gathered it up in her apron and took it back home. And she placed it very gently in the wooden cradle that John had carved before her miscarriage. And she covered it with a red quilt from their bed, and she fed it a small mackerel and went about her work. When John came home, he saw the pup and he began raging. He says, "What's that thing doing in my cradle, covered with my blanket, eating my fish?" "It's an orphan, John," Mary said. "If I hadn't brought it here, it would have died." "Well, let it die," he said. "All those seals should die. They're out there eating all my fish. They're taking everything." "Now, John," she said, "there's plenty of fish. It's meant to be shared." "Where's my gun?" he said. But wisely, Mary had hidden his gun in the shed a long time ago. Well, all that evening, he gnashed his teeth and he shook his fist at the pup in the cradle. But as they were getting ready for bed, there was a knock at the door. "Who could that be at this hour?" Mary said. "Oh, it's probably the bailiff come to evict us and ship us off to America," John said. "Now hush," Mary said. She opened the door, and there stood a tall young man, very slender, with curly black hair, high cheekbones, and a long, thin nose. He said, "I'm sorry to bother you so late in the evening, but I was looking for lodging in the village, and they told me I might find some here. My name is Ian. I'm an artist, and I'm painting the seaside. I'm traveling around painting the seaside, and I need a room for just a week. I won't be any trouble. All I have is my paintbrushes, my easel, and some paints," he said, just for a week. I'll be out all day." "Well, of course we have a room we can rent you," Mary said. "Of course we do," John said. "We could use the money, those seals." And Mary elbowed him to silence. They started up the stairs, and John said, "You're taking him to our room. Where will we sleep?" "In the child's room," Mary said. Well, Ian looked at the room, and John looked at Ian and realized he was wearing a sweater knit in the pattern of Ian's village, and the hem was embroidered with his initials to identify him if needed, but John didn't recognize the pattern. But they talked and agreed on a price, and the money was paid. And Mary told Ian, "Now, in the morning, help yourself to the porridge and to some of the smoked mackerel." "Don't eat all the mackerel," John said. "Why those seals?" And Mary again elbowed him to silence. The next morning, Ian was out bright and early to paint, and John was out fishing. And when they came home that evening, they all had a nice supper of tatties and fish cakes. And that night, and for the rest of that week in the evening, Ian entertained them with stories about all the wonderful places he had visited as he painted. And he told them about some of the strange, wonderful fish he had found. Just beautiful fish. And John said, "How do they taste?" Ian said, "Well, I imagine they'd be nice and sweet and delicate." "Can you show me some of those fish?" John said. "Well, I probably take you out to them. I'm sure the seals would show us the way." They better earn their keep," John said. Well, the next morning, John and Ian were going to set out fishing, and Mary had fixed them a box for their lunch of some oat cakes and plum jam and some dulse, and she reminded them to offer a little bit back to the sea. John and Ian set out fishing, and with Ian's help, before long, the nets were full of wriggling fish, and the lobster pots were just filled with crabs and lobsters. Ian said, "You know, John, the weather looks like it's going to turn. Maybe we better go back. We have plenty of fish." "Oh, no," John said. "I want to get some of those fabulous fish you were telling me about. Let's keep going." But just then, a large wave struck the side of the boat, and Ian was thrown overboard. John reached for his hand in the waves, but Ian disappeared. John realized he better head back to shore, and he began to turn the boat around, and then another wave struck the side, and he was thrown overboard. He went down once, twice, and he knew that if he went down a third time, that would be the end. And he had resigned himself to that fate as he felt himself going down, but then he felt two arms wrap around his waist. When John came to, the storm had passed, and he was lying on the shingle in front of their cottage, and Mary was pressing the water out of his lungs. He sat up and said, "Where's Ian? Have you seen him? He fell overboard." "I haven't seen him," Mary said. She helped John upstairs to their bed, tucked him in, and summoned the village doctor. And when the doctor got there, John told him all about Ian. He said, "Have you seen him? Have you seen him around the village at all, doctor?" Doctor said, No, I don't think I have." But then he looked behind the door and he leaned down and picked up a small painting. It was a painting of the seashore with the cottage in the background. And there was a woman in front of the cottage with a leather apron with a seal pup in the apron. And Mary searched his eyes to see if the doctor understood, because she always knew that Ian was a silkie who had come to them. And it seemed that silkies always came when there was a lesson to be learned. "Well, this is a fine painting," the doctor said, "but no, I haven't seen any strangers around the village." And he gave Mary a knowing look. Well, with that, she thanked him for his service and said, "Doctor, I'm sure you have other sick patients to take care of." And she practically shoved him out the door. John slept on. Mary went downstairs and looked at the seal pup in the cradle. It had grown during that past week, so it was time for it to go back to the sea. Mary bundled it up in her leather apron and walked down the shingle to the spot where she had found the pup. And there, out in the water, an adult seal bobbed its head above the waves. Mary set the pup down and stepped back. And the adult seal came forward and took its child back to the sea. Well, John recovered. He eventually went back to fishing, and Mary never let on that it was a Silkie who had rescued him that day. Nor did she ever tell him that 50 years ago, she had left the sea to marry a kind young fisherman who always gave part of his catch back to his friends, the seals.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, Judy, if someone came up to you and said, I'd like to tell stories, but I just don't know how, what do you tell them? How do you lead them? How do you advise them?
Well, I'd ask them, I said, well, do you know the story of Cinderella? Do you know the story of Little Red Riding Hood, Three Bears? And they're probably going to say yes. I said, well, go home and, you know, get one of your family members or, you know, your cat or your dog. I sometimes rehearse to the cat. And just tell the story. Don't read it out of the book. Just tell it as you remember it. And tell it again and again. Now, it might be a little different the next time you tell it. That's okay. But it's still the story. And then you can start looking up, you know, folk tales. There are all kinds of books out there. You know, Barnes & Noble, I know, has a lot of them. And Amazon. And you can find a lot of wonderful stories. And learn them. Don't memorize them. Learn the story.
Learn the story.
And practice on your friends and family. If you have children or grandchildren, don't read them a bedtime story. Tell them a story. They will love it. They
That's
will love it. They're
very important. That aspect of the difference of memorizing versus telling, that is sometimes a skill that you work a lifetime to get down and to get right. But we do have a lot of listeners that come from families. Families have stories. We have listeners
Yes.
that come from foreign places, and foreign places have stories. Stories come from everywhere. That is outstanding. Now, that's Judy Tarowski, a journalist, a reporter, museum performer, one of the Mountaineer State's best storytellers. Certainly, as that day when she won first prize in the Liars contest, she was. And we didn't even mention that you're recovering from a surgery recently. So your plate is very full. But I'm so pleased that you took a few minutes to be here with us tonight. Any parting thoughts for our audience?
I want to thank you, and I want to thank the radio station for allowing me to do this. If you hear of a story festival or a story gathering, go attend it. You'll love it. Go talk to the tellers. They will love to talk to you about how they do what they do. Go to find a storytelling guild. Go to the Houston meeting. Meet people. That's how you get started. And if you don't tell stories, just enjoy them. We need listeners like you. And it's just a wonderful world to enter. It's just wonderful.
There is no storytelling without story listening. That is for sure. Well, Judy, thank you very much for being with us this evening. We're going to wrap up our program tonight, but keep it right here on 90.1 KPFT HD1 for all the fantastic programming that's here. We hope you'll visit kpft.org and consider becoming a member or a sustaining member. And join us every Wednesday evening for So What's Your Story and learn about the everyday magic. Keep loving stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Larry Thompson, and along with the rest of the team here and Judy, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you like, it's never too late to live happily ever after.
The following meetings are currently